Greg Wyshynski here, Jeff Merrick on the telephone.
Hello.
On this gloriously dark and rainy Monday here in New York City. How's the weather up by you, sir?
Yeah, dark and rainy, but I'm in a very historic building for hockey broadcasting right now. You know where that is, Greg? It is not the CBC. It's on Front Street. It is the Eaton Center. And why is this a historic building for broadcasting? Because when they were building Maple Leaf Gardens, Foster Hewitt was trying to find a gondola perch where they could set up the media area. And it wasn't until he walked through the Eaton Center and looked down at all the shoppers that he realized, I want the broadcast booth high above the arena. So it was in this building where Foster Hewitt walked through and said, this is where the booth is going to go for radio. And that's why to this day, and pretty much the lion's share of NHL arenas, the broadcast booth is high above the rink.
That's pretty cool. I remember I think when Ottawa first started, they were in that bingo hall, and I remember the roof was so low that sometimes it would cut off the camera as it was swinging back and forth.
But I
always appreciated that the vantage point of the announcers. It kind of made hockey a unique animal in some cases. And there you go, a little bit of history from our history boy.
There you go.
To start up the podcast.
That's all I got for you today. After that, I've got nothing. That's a lot of sound coming out of my mouth.
As you know, history, of course, made this weekend at the draft lottery. So the question then becomes, Jeff Merrick, who is the saddest right now amongst these people when it comes to how the lottery worked out? Your choices are Tim Murray, Gary Bettman, NBC, Connor McDavid.
Wow. Well, first of all, I mean, Tim Murray's been the most vocal about it. To the point where if I'm Jack Eichel, I'm thinking, maybe I go back to BU for another year, after hearing about being, you know, the consolation prize. Well, if you have a choice between one and two, you obviously want number one. I'm in a unique spot right now because I work at Rogers, for Sportsnet. And from our point of view, this is probably the second best result. As far as television goes, I mean, we're rights holders, you know, nationally. So, you know, you can be sure that your Wednesday night, doubleheader game is going to have a lot of Connor McDavid, ditto for Saturdays and the nightcap games for Hockey Night in Canada. And then we're regional rights holders as well for the Edmonton games. And Edmonton's a unique television creature, even though Edmonton's had, let's just say to be generous, a challenging few seasons. The TV numbers have always been good, and even nationally, when we put the Oilers on late on Saturday nights or Wednesdays, they always draw really well. And I don't know whether that's just the fumes of hockey fans that remember the powerhouse of the 1980s, but Edmonton's always kind of drawn well on TV at the local level and the national level. So this is, you know, a bonanza from that point of view. He stays in Canada, so it's not great for NBC, although there is a U.S. superstar named Jack Eichel to build around. If you're Gary Bettman, do you want him in a more significant marketplace than Edmonton? Probably. If you're an NHL, put it this way,
probably.
if you're an NHL player, Greg, where do you want Connor McDavid? I would argue Toronto. If you're sick of paying the elevated rate of escrow, you want to go where they're going to maximize revenues with Connor. And that's probably Toronto. But, you know, Edmonton's going to be in that spot now where they're going to relish in being the most hated team around the NHL because for another year they get to select first overall. And this time I would think this is as close to a foolproof number one pick as you can get. So Edmonton's poised to become the new fill-in-the-blank team. Maybe Pittsburgh, maybe Vancouver is the most hated team in the NHL.
Yeah. The looks on the faces of Gary Bettman and Bill Daly were as if someone had told them that National Hockey League headquarters was being relocated to the Yukon. Like, I've never seen two people sadder or more frustrated at that moment in their lives than those two.
First of all, how great was Bill Daly? I was on Hockey Central and making this point. That was a command performance. Like, honestly... he should do that here's a guy who went to Rutgers. Here's a guy that played football. Here's a guy that, you know, trained to be a lawyer. Here's a guy that's been through numerous battles with the NHL Players Association who played the role perfectly on Saturday. The slight little pause. You go to theater school, Greg, to learn how to deliver what Bill Daly delivered on Saturday.
Yeah, he was
that
great.
That little pause right before you announce the team, you know, just completely stone-faced and not betraying anything. Like, honestly, there you could not have picked a better person to do that on Saturday than Bill Daly. And we all know Bill. Like, he's like a... He's a lovable guy. He's a gregarious guy. He's always got a smile for it. He's like a lovable. He just like stone faced it and had perfect pausing. Like, this should be taught in theater schools. Here's how you do that role. If this ever comes up on a script, Bill Daly nails it. If you ever, you know, auditioning for a movie and you have to be the guy that announces, you know, a draft lottery in sports, follow how Bill Daly did it, because this guy frickin' nailed it on Saturday. He was my first star from the weekend.
He was fantastic. I completely agree. He knew the drama, and then when Edmonton got the golden ticket, the reaction and emotion in his face was palpable. Listen, I from an American perspective, I'm bummed that McDavid didn't go someplace a little bit sexier. The only part of me that feels compelled to say that the McDavid to Edmonton thing is going to be great is the idea that, you know, hockey is better when you have juggernauts. Hockey is better when you have teams that you strive to beat. But that's always contingent on it being a good team. And I think where I was trying to figure out the root of all of this, just complete depression and anger that Edmonton got the pick. And I think it is a combination of them having so many high draft picks in the last 6 years and doing nothing with them. And I think the nothing with them is the key part. The confidence that we all have in management of fully forming a team around McDavid, Eberle, Hall, Nugent Hopkins, et cetera, is quite low. And the thing that's going to be the most interesting thing about McDavid going there is, will Connor McDavid be a big enough draw for free agents that they will live in Edmonton for the chance to play with him?
Not just free agent players, the free agent coaches as well. Like, all of a sudden, in my estimation, Edmonton has got a lot more attractive to some potentially free agent head coaches around the NHL. Some that have been dismissed, some that parted ways with the organization today, and some that are still in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It is a good question, but all of a sudden, Edmonton now just became a much more desirable place. And here's another thing to consider as well. And it's always interesting to go back to Superstars Hockey DB pages, and you look at the early years, and, you know, look at all the lunkheads they had to carry around the ice with them. Connor McDavid is not walking into that. Like, Connor McDavid is not part of the beginning of a rebuild. You know, he's going into a situation where he's in year 3, 4, take your pick, however cynical you might be, of a rebuild in Edmonton right now. So he's going in there. He has people to play with. You know, he's not lugging anyone around the ice. He's not dragging guys up and down the ice 200 feet. He walks in there with players that he can play with. So in a lot of ways, from a marketing perspective, you know, capital N NHL is a perfect no. But from a hockey perspective for Connor McDavid, he's walking in there with guys to play with. And now some big decisions. I'm with it, because this team needs to do a few things. A couple more defensemen and a goaltender. And a goaltender and a goaltender. And did I mention a goaltender? It's what they have to have. And you want to say to yourself, hold on a second here, but they don't want to break up this core that they've put together. Nor do I think they should. Nor do I think that they can... You know, I think they can do this without having to touch Jordan Eberle, or touch Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, or to touch Taylor Hall, or even touch Nell Yakupov, who still has plenty of potential. I think that if I'm Leon Draisaitl, I'm a little bit nervous right now. As tempting as it might be to look at the Oilers and say, oh, look at this down the middle, and down the middle is where you win hockey games, and you're going to have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. If you don't want to touch the core and you still want to trade someone that has, you know, high market value, and is not that far removed from being a 100-point player in the Western Hockey League, and is someone that hockey teams will covet, would it surprise you at all if they put out the Leon Draisaitl shingle to try to bring in a goaltender or a defenseman? Wouldn't surprise me at all.
I guess the only thing is that if you really wanted to go all in and get yourself a primo top pairing defenseman, it's going to cost you much more than that. I mean, you could probably find that for Nugent Hopkins, couldn't you?
But you want to resist. You could. I just don't know that Edmonton's at the place where they necessarily have to do that. I still think you're dealing with potential for Leon Draisaitl. You know, he's had an awkward beginning of the season in Kelowna, and kind of had little face going back to junior. And you do want to see more goals out of Draisaitl and Kelowna right now. But, you know, they're into the conference final against Portland. We'll see how he does it. They may end up going to Quebec City in the Memorial Cup. It still could be a bonanza year for Leon Draisaitl. Could you get more for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Of course you can. It's a wonderful defenseman, wonderful centerman. But if he can find a way to get that horse on the blue line and not touch, you know, the big guys up front that you have right now, I think you invest. And you know what? You throw in a player like Justin Schultz, who has been, you know, hot and cold with this organization and may have dodged
He's been Phil Housley without the defense, is what you're trying to say.
We've talked about it before, eh? <It's> like, and maybe there's someone out there looking for that. But right now, if you're Edmonton, a whole host of opportunities and potential just opened up the door, not just for players on the ice, but coaches behind the bench as well. So it's good. And don't forget too, they still got picks, right? I mean, come draft. I mean, it's going to be, you know, star time when Connor McDavid gets announced first overall in Sunrise, but then there's still room to play if you're the Edmonton Oilers. So to me, instantly after Saturday, they're the most interesting team to follow in the offseason.
For sure. And you know, we've seen two teams do this where they've had a glut of high draft picks at around the same time. And it was the Quebec Nordiques. And it was the Pittsburgh Penguins. And your comment about goaltending is bang on, because where would those kids be without Patrick Waugh? And where would the Penguins have been without Marc-Andre Fleury, who I know always gets shit on and maligned, but the bottom line is that they didn't have to worry about that position. Like, they had all those picks, Sid and Gino and Jordan Staal and Letang, all those picks. And then they had, you know, another top pick between the pipes. They didn't have to worry about the position. The Edmonton Oilers can't afford to grow a goalie. They're going to have to probably find a goalie outside the organization. And the ability to find one is tough enough. The ability to find the right one is going to be even tougher. It's not set in stone that this is going to be McDavid goes to Edmonton and then thus begins the decade of dominance.
No, not right away. You do have to find that goaltender. You have to put some band-aids on the team right away. I wouldn't surprise me if they go after a goaltender like Anthony Niemi, right out of the gate. Whether he's, you know, the long-term guy, which many doubt, he's at least a band-aid. And you're going to need to find a goaltender that's okay playing behind this defense.
Yeah, that's the key.
Which still has issues. I mean, Darnell Nurse, we all suspect, is going to be a really good NHL defenseman, as is Oscar Klefbom. And we'll see what they can do in the offseason. I do think this becomes a more attractive place for free agents. I do think that this now becomes an attractive place for players, even though the Edmonton Oilers may not be on their no-fly list, that players now would say, you know what, I want to amend my no-trade list to include the Edmonton Oilers. I just think that became a much sexier market for a lot of players around the NHL.
Here's what makes me mental, though, and I think makes a lot of people mental. These guys haven't earned this. They haven't earned this. This management team was one bad season away from being on its ass, and now it's probably bought themselves a 5-year reprieve.
Here's what you need to do with Vivian, and what I need to do with TJ, and what I need to do with Brody. We need to go and buy a dictionary, you and me, Greg, as parents. Uh-huh. And we need to go to the letter F and look at the word fair, and we need to tear that piece of paper out of the dictionary. I think the word that does the most damage to human beings is the word fair, because fair doesn't exist. It really doesn't exist. And case in point, the Edmonton Oilers winning the lottery and getting Connor McDavid. We do so much damage to ourselves psychologically by thinking this word fair means something, that this concept is actually a real thing and we should adhere to it. I think we'd all be a lot better off if we got, maybe just get rid of the entire page, not just the word. Tear the entire page out and everything that comes with the word fair. Just get rid of it, because all it does is set us up for disappointment in situations where the Oilers grab Connor McDavid.
Right. Finally, on the draft lottery, which was super entertaining, and I still don't know why the NHL didn't simply just air the actual lottery, the 9-minute lottery video that they had with Bettman.
Pretty cool, eh?
That was... That was so unintentionally hilarious. How he spends seven minutes explaining the rules of this thing, and then the dummy whose one job it is to press the button once every 10 seconds presses it twice on the first thing, and now Reddit's blown up with conspiracy theories. Where do you think Eichel's? Well, let me rephrase that. Where do you think McDavid's mind is on Edmonton, and where do you think Eichel's mind is on Buffalo vis-a-vis Tim Murray outwardly being disappointed and not getting the top pick?
First, to Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid applied for exceptional status in the Ontario Hockey League, regardless of who's going to select first overall, and that was an organization that was in chaos, which is the Erie Otters, and he had no problem going, and that was, you know, it's kind of a leap because here's a kid, you know, from Newmarket, a little bit north of Toronto, who's not, you know, pressuring to play in one of the big markets, you know, London or Kitchener or Windsor or Oshawa, anywhere around his hometown. You know, he's the guy that went to, as a 15-year-old, to another country with a really struggling hockey team and had no problem signing with that squad. So it's not as if, you know, Connor McDavid has, you know, tried to cherry pick and find the perfect landing spot for himself. And I don't think we're going to have another Lindros situation. I know we're not going to have another Lindros situation. He's been consistent. The family's been consistent. I've talked to his father, Brian, about this a number of times. Whoever drafts him, that's where he's going to go. So I don't think that, you know, Connor McDavid is going to, you know, try to stonewall Edmonton here and, you know, make a big scene and not report or not put on the jersey in Sunrise. I don't think we're going to see that at all. You know, probably should have been coached in his poker face a little bit better.
you think?
You know, I mean, and that was picked up, but at the end of it, you know, he's 17 years old. And was it his first choice? Probably not. But Connor McDavid's been consistent from day one. He wants to play in the National Hockey League, and he's going to walk into a situation where he has players to play with. I'll tell you what. Right now, if I'm the Edmonton Oilers, I stop with the Japanese goldfish game. I stop being coy, and I just come out and say we're taking Connor McDavid. And I listen, man, and I start getting the full court press on selling McDavid and the family on the virtues of the organization and the city as well. As soon as the Erie Otters are eliminated from the playoffs, whether it's against the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds or whether it's in the next round of the OHL final or whether it's in the Memorial Cup, the minute that happens, I charter the private plane, you know, right to wherever Connor McDavid is. I fly him and the family into Edmonton and then start the sell job as hard as you can.
I have no problem with them playing coy with McDavid. To the point where it was starting to piss me off that the Edmonton dude that was at the draft was like being pestered by reporters. Be like, why can't you just tell us who you're drafting? We all know who it is. I'm like, well, because you know what? We all know who they're going to draft, but that moment, don't steal that moment from that kid. The kid still needs the moment where his name gets announced and there's all the pageantry and the balloons drop from the ceiling and all that shit. Like, I got no problem with them holding that back until the draft.
I guess we all have our illusions we live with, but make no mistake about it. He's going to Edmonton, and everybody knows it. You know, I don't think this is, well, they're learning the lesson from the Team Stamkos program from Tampa Bay, which messed up the kid. Everybody knows he's going. Everybody knows how good this player is. Let's just be honest about it.
Time remaining before we get to Dan Murphy of Sportsnet to talk some Red Wings and Bolts. Anything strike you over the weekend as far as the playoffs series go, sir?
Eric Carlson played out of his mind yesterday. One of the best games I've ever seen Eric Carlson play. I mean, up and down the ice, the guy's a marvel to look at. But the physical play in the first period, did you ever think you'd see Eric Carlson play like that? Like,
nope.
Those are moments like that where you say to yourself, this guy's taking the next step, and this guy's getting a new level of respect, not just with his teammates and fans, but around the league. That was the captain that looked at the situation and said, I need to do something out of my comfort zone here in order to help us win a game and get back into this series. To me, that was and mind you, it was in a loss, but that to me was a dynamite performance of the weekend. Like, if you point at one single performance that who impressed you this weekend, the captain in Ottawa that impressed me. What about you?
That was great. I also give Dave Cameron credit for overcoming what could have been a desire to continue with the folk heroism and go back to Craig Anderson in game 3. Like, I know that the goal he gave up to Wiest in overtime was a softie but everything else he did in that game was heavy lifting, and they probably won't even make overtime if he doesn't do what he did. So
perfect
I give Cameron credit.
I know.
It's a short side goal. He might have been able to stop that, but everything else he did in that game warranted applause, and I thought it was a gutsy move by Cameron, considering who got him to the dance, and I thought it was Anderson did some really classy things too about Hammett as well. So, it sucks that Ottawa clearly has ran out of gas, but what are you gonna do? Everything else, let's see, real quick. Tarasenko doing exactly what you would have been waiting for a St. Louis Blue to do for years, which is take over a game and score a big goal.
Who breathed the biggest sigh of relief is Kent Hitchcock. The pressure is intense in St. Louis right now, and it's being felt behind the bench. And we'll see. Minnesota's lost a handful of games down the stretch to conclude the season. Tonight's a real big one for the Minnesota Wild, and maybe even a bigger one for the St. Louis Blues.
Darling starts instead of Crawford. It's a move they had to make based on how Crow has played, but I don't think they have any problem going back to him, and I don't think that's a bad move at all. And obviously, 2-1 in that series, and Nashville's done without Shea Weber.
Sure looks that way. This isn't like the Flames without Mark Giordano. Looking at a different team doesn't help. If Pekka Rinne's not playing great, missing Mike Fisher is a big one as well. But Darling didn't have to be great yesterday. He just had to be good, and he was. Because the two great players on the Blackhawks yesterday were Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa. And when those two guys are cooking the way they were yesterday, good luck to anyone in the NHL.
2-0 Ducks. I know nobody thinks the series is over because we go to the Madhouse in Winnipeg tonight. But like I said, I want nothing more than to see a 7-1 Ducks victory tonight and Winnipeg fans crying in their jerseys by the third period.
No, I thought we loved Winnipeg Jets fans. I know I still need to. I want to see that. I just want to hear how loud that building gets. And how creative those chants get in Winnipeg. Unlike you, I don't want to see the whitewash during the whiteout tonight between Anaheim and Winnipeg.
The Never Say Die Flames leading the Canucks 2-1 now, and they are. This is youthful exuberance overcoming every underlying analytic, and they're so goddamn fun to watch right now.
Old time hockey, Eddie Shore, Toe Blake, and we're seeing it, and with these young kids as well, and we're starting. Scott Morrison and I were talking about this afternoon. We're now, because Vancouver's kind of been a friendlier team this year under Willie Desjardins and Jim Benning and Trevor Linden. They've been specifically last night, didn't you see elements of that 2011 Vancouver Canucks team coming out? The poke behind the knees, the sucker punches, the grabbing the kid and filling them up.
Burrows.
Like, you saw Burrows
totally.
And like, we saw. You know, some of the nastier elements of the 2011 team come out of Vancouver yesterday where they've kind of suppressed that all year long.
But that's how they have to play. I mean, I think that's the path to victory against the Flames, to be honest
with
you, is to try to provoke them and get their heads out of this game because right now they're kind of locked in. Real quick, Sportsnet runs an expose on Sidney Crosby's playoff troubles, and then 2 hours later he wins the game for the Penguins against the Rangers.
I know. It's all a matter of timing. What's wrong with Sid? Can you fix Sidney Crosby? What's gone wrong? But the thing is, everybody was talking about it too. You know, it's one of those moments where you're putting it together and you're saying to yourself, well, yeah, what if he snaps into natural in the first period here? But it kind of was, you know, part of the story of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and we've seen the frustration level of Sidney Crosby be sky high before, so see what happens tonight.
It's going to be really interesting to see. Yeah, the Rangers' response tonight is going to be very interesting to a game that I think they're probably real pissed off they lost. And finally, because we're going to cover the other series in a second with Murph, Capitals, Islanders, Tavares, the overtime goal. Two things about this series so far that have really stuck out to me. The first being that the Capitals are again falling back on several bad tendencies they've had in postseasons past. And the allowing the Islanders to score the first goal in all three games of the series. You're going to hand them a free pass to the second round? I mean, I don't get – they're insane. They're just so maddeningly frustrating, this Capitals team.
Johnny Boychuk on Alexander Ovechkin, specifically yesterday, was outstanding. And as much as we, you know, handed over to Travis Hamonic, because, you know, one of the premier shutdown defenses in the NHL, I thought Johnny Boychuk was great. And if you look at how – you know, how that goal went in yesterday in overtime, it's really simple plays. Winning a draw, dumping it in, a lazy clear by John Carlson, kept in by Nick Leddy, and all of a sudden you just throw it on the net and weird things happen. Nothing elite about that play. Like, nothing elite about how the Islanders grabbed a 2-1 series lead. It was just very simple, basic hockey that won the game from, was it an odorous goal? Yeah, maybe, but getting there, the Caps, you know, as much as we talk about how much they can't score, the Caps allowed the Islanders in a very simple fashion to get in a position to take a 2-1 series lead.
Yeah, yeah. And Tim Gleason was abjectly terrible in that game, by the way. 10-20 total ice time, benched pretty much in the third period.
Yeah.
I am super happy I'm not in Washington or a Capitals fan, because this is all happening again. We've seen it before. We've seen it and we'll see it again. And
well, you'd be living at the channel if you were a wish. We know that.
Well, that's true. That is a benefit. And finally, sir, as we transition you off this phone, because I know you're a very busy man, Todd McLellan and the San Jose Sharks agree to mutually uncouple.
Yep.
The question of the day is, where do you think Todd McLellan ends up?
Edmonton. Coached the Western Hockey League before, a Western guy. Wouldn't like I mentioned, with McDavid situation, Edmonton opens up a lot of possibilities for coaches as well. Wouldn't even surprise.
Hello? I think we lost Jeffrey. Is that true, Maddie? Did we lose Merrick? That's all right. It wouldn't surprise him to, I'll fill in the blank, see him coach the Sharks next year in a giant twist. Brian Roberts says Toronto or Buffalo. M. Wall, McLellan goes to Detroit. Babcock goes to San Jose. Hashtag wishful thinking. Don Heidelberg, I guess it has to be Edmonton. Isn't that how it works? NHL draft. Zach Arnold, Edmonton spread the wealth after the lottery win. It's a lot of people saying the Oilers, and I think the Western Hockey connection obviously is a good one. The chance to coach this collection of young talent is another one. McLellan did say something on the phone before about how having the best player does not always mean having the best team. That's pretty much true. A lot of people saying, let's say, Detroit, in the sense that he would go back to Detroit if Babcock moves on. I, for one, don't think, A, he'd want to be in Babcock's shadow, because honestly, he's worked years to emerge from it, and that's one of the reasons that the Sharks have had, or did have, so much success against Detroit. But I would also say that Blaisdell's got that thing locked up if Babcock moves on. But that's just me. I think dark horse for McLellan, by the way, is the Flyers. Maybe not a dark horse in the sense that I know he's on their short list, but I think a lot of people have him staying in the Western Conference. But I think dark horse might be the Flyers. That'll throw a ton of money at their next coach. And don't discount the idea that maybe Ron Hextall understands McLellan a little bit better than others, having seen him coach against the LA Kings for years and years and years. He may be a McLellan fan, from what I gather, but I guess we'll see what happens. But let's talk to Dan Murphy, Sportsnet, who is currently covering the series involving Mike Babcock, and maybe Babcock's last series in Detroit, for all we know. But 1-1 with Detroit and Tampa Bay, and they head to the Joe, with Tampa having mud-thumped them pretty good in Game 2. And Murph, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Back down south and just enjoying a ton of Tim Tebow talk.
That's right. Jesus, right? Too much Tebow talk. Now, we have said long on this podcast, the deal with Peter Mrazek is, of course, that he will look like Dominic Hasek in one game and then Dom from down the street, the garbage man, the other game. And he did not play well in Game 2. They're sticking with him. Is it just a case where we're going to just go hot and cold with this guy for the rest of the series, or do you think there's a chance he might be playing for his job in Game 3?
Well, I think there's a chance. I mean, it's kind of interesting, too, because it's Babcock picks him as the guy that gives him the best chance to win going into the series. And it wasn't so much about his play down the stretch. I think he won 2 of his last 8 starts going into the playoffs, but he was, what do you say, less worse than Jimmy Howard, I guess, down the stretch, and Howard kind of lost the job. But you've got a coach that doesn't really care about the Wings' future. I mean, you've got Howard signed to the deal. He doesn't care about stepping on Howard's toes. So you have to believe that right now Babcock thinks that Mrazek is the best goaltender. You know, maybe if you're talking to Kenny Holland, you say, geez, I wish he'd start, you know, Jimmy Howard, since we got this guy signed next year. But I have to believe that Babcock thinks he's the best guy to win a game. Now, if he has another tough outing, 4 goals on 18 shots, whatever it was in Game 2, then maybe you pull him, you put Howard in. He's been more tested in the playoffs. His numbers are actually pretty good the last 2 years in the postseason, so maybe he's got a shorter leash. But I have to believe that, you know, Babcock doesn't believe in Howard at this point, and that's why he's going back to Mrazek.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking when you think about it. But, I mean, that's also something that, a lot of Detroit fans have been saying all year long, which is that Jimmy Howard is a mediocre postseason goalie, and they were all very excited for Mrazek, so we'll see what he brings in Game 3. What's impressed you so far about the Lightning in this series?
Well, I mean, they've pretty much been utterly dominant. You know, what most teams would love to have two lines like they have in terms of offense. Now Detroit hopes to counter that a little bit with Ablocator back, because now they can split up Zetterberg and Datsyuk, and perhaps Datsyuk doesn't have to have the same defensive responsibilities. But I'd say this thing for right now for Tampa is that, you know, I know that Stamkos had 8 shots in Game 1, and I know he had 2 assists in Game 2, but he hasn't seemed to be a really dominant figure, and yet they're still piling up the offense and the shots because of that second line. To me, Tyler Johnson is terrifying. His speed is unreal, and a lot of times when you have guys that are that fast, or their hands, you know, can't catch up to their feet, but the stuff he does at top speed is amazing. And you know, I cover teams out Western Canada, and I didn't get a chance to see him more than twice this year, except for a couple times on TV. And I just think that line is amazing, how they've controlled play and with his speed.
They really are. I mean, it gives them such an advantage over other teams to have two lines that can go as good as they go. You mentioned Stamkos, and I noticed Quincy picked up some roughing pims against them in Game 2. Have they been overly physical against Stamkos in the series? Is that one of the factors that he's dealing with?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that Tampa's probably the more physical team, even than Detroit. I know Cromwell crushes guys with hits, but in terms of real physical players after the whistle, I don't even think that Detroit can match Tampa. I talked to Quincy today because we had a shot, and we didn't run it, but we had a shot that it looked like maybe Stamkos was biting Quincy when they got in that headlock competition. So I asked Quincy, and Quincy said, no, if you bit anything, it might have been my glove a little bit. But Quincy said, listen, and let's make something clear. I didn't go after Stamkos. That's not the kind of player I am. I'm not going to go after a player like him. Which was very interesting. He said, it's just, but once I started getting choked out, I had to kind of get him in a headlock myself. So I don't think they've been overly physical on Stamkos. There hasn't been much more than a couple devastating hits in the series. It's been more north-south and more of a track meet than anything.
Yeah, indeed. What has to change for Detroit tonight to win this game and put some pressure back on Tampa? Is it a matter of just Mrazek playing up to Game 1 standards more than Game 2, or is there other things that are kind of in play right now?
Well, I mean, one thing was that aside from Pavel Datsyuk going solo Datsyuk in Game 1, I think we need to see some more offensive pressure from Detroit. They felt that they were better offensively in Game 2, and I suppose that they were. But now that they'll split those guys up, it looks like Ablocator will play with Zetterberg and Nyquist, and that means Datsyuk with Tatar and Helm. Well, now they've got two lines themselves. And I think that's going to help a lot, because Babcock admitted that when Datsyuk is concerned about trying to slow down that second line, then all of a sudden you've got Sheehan on the top line, and they just can't compete. Now he feels that this balances things a little bit more. He thinks his fourth line has been good, but his third line has been non-existent. So I think that this is going to help a lot for them to have more offensive chances. And I don't think that they can match Tampa in offense. Nobody could this year. 3.13 goals per game. But I think this gives them a better chance to do so.
For sure. Do you? I know this is impossible to really glean, you know, from just covering the team, but this is more of a Spidey sense question, I think, than anything else. What do you think about Babcock? I mean, do you? What's your inkling on what happens to him? Say if they do lose in the first round of the Lightning.
Well, I think he's gone from Detroit. That's my guess. Obviously, Ken Holland doesn't want to lose him. I just don't know if Ken Holland wants to pay him $5 million a year. And he's getting the sense that that's kind of the money he's going to get. I think the one thing with Babcock is he's not lacking confidence, but I think he really wants to try to make a move for all NHL coaches and kind of make that next step, break that next barrier and pay so he can drag some guys along with him. So, of course, he's going to pick the best situation for him, but he's going to have more than one bidder. So I think that he's going to be gone. I mean, obviously, that there's a good backup plan for Detroit and Blashill. They could bring him up from Grand Rapids. He's been in demand with a lot of other teams as well. But my sense is that he's gone. And he said something very interesting. the other day. It was an afternoon game in Tampa, 3 o'clock, so they made him available at 12:45. And I couldn't believe that some Detroit media, they were grilling him about his future. This was on a game day, pre-game availability, because he wasn't available in the morning, and they were saying, you know, another coaching job up for grabs. Does it bother you? Their name's coming up, and what are you going to do? And, you know, this is before he's getting ready for a game. And he said one interesting thing. He said that his daughter's going to university, and his son is going to go play hockey in Boston. So right away people are like, Boston. You know, there's another job. my sense is he's probably gone, but you never know. I mean, Kenny Holland will do what he can to try to keep.
No, we lost Murph. It's all right. I think we got everything we need out of Murph. Keep him. Okay, sure, that's fine. Why is the phones always... I mean, the phones are always goddamn... Every time I do a solo show, the phones are like this. I don't get it. Why does technology not want me to do a show? I'm trying to give the people what they want. Landlines, and also, why have payphones all been just relegated to places where homeless guys take pisses and a place where you go and there's no receiver because it's been ripped out of the phone? Seriously, like living in New York for the last few months, I don't quite know why they have payphone booths anywhere. Like, none of the phones work, and it's just a toilet. I saw a guy sitting on one of the little bench by the, that's like where the phone book would go if there was a phone book. And I just said, dude, do you understand how many guys have just defecated there? It's the grossest thing ever. The grossest. Anyways. One last thing about, one thing about Babcock that I find interesting is he's going to be fantasy casted to so many different places. He can write his own ticket, money-wise. I've been thinking long and hard about what his next destination would be, and I don't know what the mitigating factor is going to be. Is it the biggest challenge? Is it the chance to coach McDavid? Is it money? I've heard time and time again, it's not going to be power. It's not the player personnel thing. So if he does leave Detroit, I am confused as to where he would go. I mean, there is that connection with Tim Murray from the Anaheim days that you kind of go back to. And you say to yourself, all right, maybe Buffalo's the spot with without McDavid. Eichel's there, obviously. Consolation prize. And listen, I didn't say this when Merrick was on before. If you're a Buffalo fan and you're trying to portray this as anything but a disappointment, just shut up. I get the idea that you're tanking this season because you have two options, okay? But you have option B now. And Tim Murray, everything he said and everything he did on the night of the draft is exactly how he feels you should feel, the organization should feel. You whiffed on the big prize. You got a nice parting gift. Eichel's great, but you didn't get McDavid. And anything that's being said now about how, oh, we're fine with either guy is revisionist history. Dan, thanks. Sorry about the phone thing. That's probably our fault. You're finishing up about Babcock, and I was just saying that I don't know what the driving motivation for Babcock would be for his next destination, if it's money or if it's the ability to coach someone like McDavid or what. I don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I think money is obviously, you know, that's going to be a big factor in it, not because he's greedy, but like I said, he's trying to, you know, break the next barrier. What is it, $3 million now for the highest paid coach? Q, maybe a couple guys at $2 million, so I think that's part of it. You know, and maybe a new challenge. You know, obviously if, you know, McDavid now in Edmonton, I mean, maybe that makes it a lot more attractive job, for a coach. Well, obviously it would. But there are some other interesting jobs out there. Toronto. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys that would love to be the guy that finally gets Toronto to that next level, because you'd be an absolute king in that town. So, you know, Boston as well. But, you know, maybe it's going to be like a guy that can become a UFA just to see what's out there before he goes back to the team and test the waters, but I think that he will end up leaving.
Yeah. And I guess finally, it is the story of the day, or of the weekend. What were your thoughts when you saw that the Edmonton Oilers were polled as owners of the top pick and possessors of Connor McDavid in the draft lottery?
Well, we were watching from Hat Tricks in Tampa Bay, you know, a bar down the street from the rink, and my first reaction was I laughed so hard. I don't know why. It struck me as so bloody funny that they won that, you know, because maybe we should have all seen it coming. And maybe it's better to tank for 9 straight years than just one. Maybe that's how you get this to happen. But
right.
For me, my initial reaction was laughing, dumbfounded, and then, you know, kind of happy because, you know, I cover the Canucks on a daily basis, so I'm going to see this kid a lot in my career over the next 5 years. So,
yeah.
To me, absolutely hilarious. You know, I'm upset that the Oilers organization got rewarded this way. But I have to be kind of happy for the fans because they've dealt with a lot of crap over the last 6-7 years.
And I guess finally, because you jogged my memory about the Vancouver thing with you, what are your thoughts on their series so far against the Calgary Flames? A contentious one at that, but really is stacking up as the vets versus the kids, and the kids are winning right now.
Yeah, I think Willie Desjardins is being outcoached a bit. You know, rolling four lines has been his go-to, and it's worked very well this year. And it worked great in game two, but when things aren't going well, you have to shorten the bench. And I'm sorry, when Chris Higgins is playing 3 more minutes in a game than Daniel Sedin, like last night, it's not right. When Daniel Sedin plays 30 seconds of the final, 5.5 minutes, it's not right. And when Daniel, I think, is 6th in the series among Canucks forwards and even strength ice time, I don't think that's going to help. Also, perhaps BX and Spies have been exposed a bit, and it's, you know, go with 4 defensemen when you have to try to make up goals in a game as well. So I think Willie's a good coach, but I think sometimes you have to change things up in game to try to make adjustments, and I don't think he did that last night or in game 1 for that matter.
Really interesting. Very, very interesting. All right. I've been fascinated by Calgary only because they are in the great tradition of Colorado and Toronto teams that seem to play better than their analytics would say, the bottom dropping off at some point, but not in the series, and it's been surprising to see them do what they've done against Vancouver. But, Murph, you're the best. Thanks for hanging in there through all the technical difficulties and whatnot, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, for sure, and I just want to say I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, being out the East Coast here, I'm turning off the TV at 1:45 in the morning trying to watch these late games. You guys are kings.
Well,
I can't do it all year long, I'll tell you that.
In Merrick's case, he has to watch them because he's on TV. In my case, I just don't watch them. I base everything I know off the box score, Murph. It's much easier that way rather than actually watching the games.
Well, I can't watch without drinking, too, so that makes it more difficult trying to get up
the morning. That's an excellent point. All right, Murph. Thanks, man. Take care.
All right, guys. Take care.
I make sure that we take care of the drinking part. I mean, after all, it was Mad Men last night. Got to have old fashions for Mad Men. Need Ruby. It's good times. A couple things real quick I need to just to vent on before we get to some QOD stuff. First of all, I want to speak to my friends in Montreal for a second, and let's talk about the word controversy. See if you can follow my train of thought here. When a goal is scored and the opposing team doesn't leave the ice because they believe something has gone awry on the play that would necessitate the goal not counting, they don't leave the bench. They send a proxy in Kyle Turris out to talk to the officials. The officials mull it over themselves by the penalty box for several minutes. And then replays are run and rerun like the Zapruder film to see if, in fact, Brandon Prust touched the puck with his glove or with his stick in an illegal fashion before Dale Weiss scores the game winner in overtime. All of these things add up to equal the word controversy. Now, just because the end result is clearly the puck hitting the stanchion and then deflecting to center ice and Prust didn't touch it, even though that end result is that in fact it was a good call and a good goal, doesn't mean the play itself in that moment wasn't controversial. Do you understand what I'm saying? So all of the people who emailed in and tweeted at me in the last 24 hours about the headline on the story I wrote last night saying, what controversy? This is a controversy. Sorry to attention. You dummies. It's controversial in the moment. That's why people talked about it. That's why gifts were made and the whole play was parsed and people to this day, to this morning, we're still saying it was a hand pass. That's why the CBC or Sportsnet needed to run an aerial view replay to exonerate Prust, one that I wish NBC may have gotten their hands on at some point. But alas, coverage being what it is. So that is why the play is controversial. Because if you could show me how many times this season an overtime goal was scored and the losing team refuses to leave their bench because they think they got jobbed, if this is something that's commonplace, I will gladly pull back controversy and say you are completely right. It is a normalized play, and how silly of me to try to drum up interest into something that's not there. But I have a feeling it doesn't happen as often as me you might think it does. So I stand by controversy. Todd McClellan. The mutual decision to part ways between Todd McClellan and the San Jose Sharks is so unprecedented in some ways that I'm still wrapping my brain around it. The idea that he's not fired, he just kind of goes away. He leaves with, what, his dignity? I don't know. I mean, to me, it's the players are kind of snarking about him now. He clearly didn't make the playoffs this season. But he's not fired. He just kind of goes away. And I don't know why. I've long thought that ownership never wanted to get rid of McClellan. That's what I thought. And I wonder whether or not this is McClellan's only path out of there. Ultimately, his call. Ultimately, he says, time for me to go. I don't know. It's just a very weird situation, but that's a very weird team now. And you think about the coaching opportunities around this league right now. See what you got. You got Buffalo, you got Philly, you got Edmonton probably, but not formally. You got yourself San Jose, you got yourself Toronto, you could have yourself Pittsburgh, you could have yourself Long Island. But I think they're going to advance in the series. And you could have yourself St. Louis if the Blues lose to the Minnesota Wild. Of all of those openings, and forgive me if I missed any, of all of those openings, couldn't you say San Jose is the least desirable place? A GM without a plan, because whatever plan he wants to enact will be blocked by either of the two star players he's still trying to trade. A locker room that could correctly be labeled toxic at this point, as far as the environment, everything else inherent to that team. I mean, they've got some horses. Let it be known. The chance to coach arguably the best playmaker in the last 20 years, in Joe Thornton, Kator, Pavelski. They've got a lot of, Marlo, they've got a lot of talent in that roster. And maybe there's somebody who thinks they can figure it out all out in a way that hasn't been figured out yet. But out of all of these teams, like, isn't San Jose in some ways the least desirable spot? Philly is a situation where they will transition to a collection of great young defensemen. And they've got a future, I think. Buffalo is a clean slate, and you have Eichel there. Edmonton, we just talked about. Toronto might be the second least desirable, only because who in their right mind would ever do that to themselves? It is literally like hitting yourself on the head with a frying pan every hour for the rest of your life, or coaching in Toronto. And yet Toronto is probably still a more desirable job than San Jose at this point. Which is saying something. Boston could be a possibility, like Dirk just mentioned. Boston's in play. The Penguins are in play if things don't work. I don't know. It should be interesting to see how this shakes out. The coaching free agency is by far the more intriguing free agency. Sportsnet and TSN should do a show about the coaches instead of the actual free agents this year. Because there are so many high-profile guys out there, and there will be even more if Babcock leaves. It's crazy to think what changes could be made, especially for teams that are still in the postseason right now. Where do you think Todd McClellan ends up was the question of the day. This is Andrew Bain.
If Babcock leaves, Todd McClellan should go to Detroit, since he can coach teams that don't need a decent goaltender.
Ouch. McClellan ain't going back to Detroit. Danny Stapp, McClellan can't fax his resume fast enough to Craig McTavish. Taking over the Oilers with Connor McHockey sounds like the perfect palate cleanser. Again, I mean, if the Oilers are actually going to try to go with an analytical bent, I think that McClellan would be your guy, wouldn't he? Puck possession guy. Tony Mercado, hopefully somewhere in the Western Conference where he can stick it to the Sharks several times a year. Oh, Mr. Wilson, Jumbo Joe needs his laundry pressed. This is from Michael Perino. McClellan should end up anywhere he plays the Sharks a lot and can show them what they're missing. Either that or Joe Thornton's family dinner. Jumbo Joe is big on the family. It's true. Mi familia. I don't know. Should be real interesting to see how this thing shakes out with McClellan. He's going to have the pick of the litter. He's going to get paid quite handsomely. But you think about Babcock being potentially available, McClellan being potentially available, Claude Julien potentially being available. You think about Bylsma still out there, Tortorella still out there, if somebody wanted to take a flyer on him. It's crazy. Bylsma's, you know, an interesting case because, you know, the reason he didn't go to Florida was financial, from everything we've heard. And I wonder now, with the price of coaches going where it's going, courtesy of Babcock, and courtesy of what McClellan's going to get, what that means for Bylsma then. It's hard to imagine he's going to be out of this game for much longer than he's been. I just don't know where he goes. But we could see a lot. We could see the entire coaching landscape of this league change within the next 3 months. It's going to be super fun to watch. DeBoer, don't forget about him. He's out there too. I guess final thing today about the draft lottery, which, by the way, was exhilarating television. I completely agree with Merrick. Daly did a great job. It was fun to watch. If you haven't seen the 9-minute video of Bettman talking, first of all, it's the most unintentionally hilarious thing they've done since the Guardians Project. To see the NHL meticulously and emphatically attempt to show that everything is on the up and up, because they know if the wrong team wins the lottery, and by that we mean like the Flyers, the hue and cry of impropriety will be deafening. Luckily, the Oilers won, so no one will ever think anything is ever fixed ever again in the history of ever. But you need to see that Bettman video. It is amazing. It is literally like if someone took IKEA instructions and just read them out loud. It is so meticulous and it's so detailed to the point of almost self-parody. I highly recommend the video, and also the part where the guy presses the button twice, completely botching the one thing he had to do that night. From an American television perspective, it's interesting times, because let's say the balance of power does shift to Edmonton, and let's say the Calgary Flames continue this trajectory upwards and onwards in the Western Conference. It could be the 1980s all over again, where either one of those teams is playing for a conference title every year in the West. Now, the good news is that because of the current playoff format, it probably means they'll be playing someone from the cast of Chicago or Dallas or St. Louis, whoever. But it could be the Flames and the Oilers being contenders for quite a long time. And to put McDavid on the Edmonton Oilers is to make that be a glamour franchise in a way that maybe no other Canadian franchise has been for quite a while. I mean, Vancouver probably was the closest thing that we had to a Canadian glamour franchise. Montreal's getting there now. Emphatic dismissal of the Senators is a good start. But American television is going to have to really warm up to the Calgarys and the Edmontons of the world. And by that I mean, for years, as long as we've done them, for years the NBC Sports Network schedule has limited the games involving the Oilers and the Flames to maybe one a season. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how the ratings game is played. McDavid is going to be a megastar in this league. How often do you put Edmonton on television? For two reasons that question's interesting. One, because every time you put Edmonton on television, it means you're not putting someone else on television. So either another Western Conference team is getting boned, or you're choosing an Edmonton game over a game that might be a sure ratings thing if you are someone who believes that the only path to good ratings on NBC is the Sabres, Flyers, Red Wings, you know, usual suspects. And the other interesting thing about McDavid on that team is how big do you go with the Oilers if you're NBC? And how do the viewers respond to McDavid? It could be that every time McDavid's on television, the ratings pop. But the key is that Edmonton doesn't give NBC any ratings. It's just the U.S. markets that do. So maybe we dictate how often we see Connor McDavid on NBC. And I guess ultimately the biggest question is, does it matter? With the advent of center ice, with the advent of pay-per-view, do we even need to have McDavid on NBC more often than not? Or can we just search and find him? Finally, Mark Cole writes in, are you going to discuss the wave of unruly fan behavior this week? I guess there was a fight at the Montreal-Ottawa game. I guess someone had their car keyed at the Islanders-Capitals game. And, the biggest one was the girl who was harassed at Bell Center. And that was a story because, you know, Ottawa's ownership invited her, and I guess her sister or cousin, whoever it was, to watch Game 3 from the owner's box. So that becomes a pretty big story when the team steps up like that. But unruly fan behavior happens in every arena, and it's just a matter of who gets the spotlight. And by no means should any incident characterize a fan base. To me, the sum total of a lot of this stuff is what is being done to prevent it, and how safe do you feel at these games? Because honestly, to me, the two big takeaways from the Montreal-Ottawa story were that the senator stepped up and invited them to the owner's box, which was a very nice gesture and, you know, obviously advantageous from a PR perspective. But the other thing was that she went to two different ushers and they did nothing. They just absolutely did nothing. They just ignored it because she was wearing the wrong colors. And to me, the biggest thing about all of these stories is what is being done to prevent this kind of behavior? What's being done to prevent bullying? What's being done to sabotage any situation that might boil over into a fight? You know, what's being done by the arenas? And the answer is usually not enough, because you have apathetic personnel, you have people that don't want to make mountains out of molehills, and you have people that in the situation in Montreal that just completely ignore stuff. Because she's the Senators fan. And then, you know, she gets hit in the head with a towel and a beer thrown on her and called a whore. So if the Montreal came out and said, we're going to review the whole thing and what have you, and hey, that's great. But, you know, they got to actually do it. Anyways, that's the show for today. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports. Thanks to Jeff Merrick for joining us. He's back tomorrow. Thanks to Dan Murphy Sports Network for joining us, as always. He's good people. Thanks to producer Maddie, who may or may not be playing the outro music now. I don't know. Maybe not. If not, that's okay. I'll just go anyway. Yeah, there it is. We'll see you tomorrow. Enjoy tonight's action, such as it is. The Penguins against the Rangers. The Duckies in Ottawa. Follow Nick Kostnicka on Twitter for all of that stuff, by the way. He'll be in Winnipeg for that craziness. Oh, brilliant. Nick on the show tomorrow, probably. And St. Louis and Minnesota in a huge, huge game. for the Wild, in my opinion. As my Blues go for the big cup win. Woohoo. Go Tarasenko. See you tomorrow. Bye. Thank you.